Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
I'd like to be the first jam to say TGIFMF.
Wait. TGIFMF? Are you sure that's right?
Yep. Thank gosh it's Fan Mail Friday.
I'm glad you got the gosh in there. Yeah, I didn't want to get too religious. Friday.
It's Friday, Jim. You're feeling better?
I am feeling a little bit better.
That's good.
I think I'm drinking a lot of water. This, we may go get a beer, which might make
you
feel even better.
Yeah, it might help you.
Okay. All right, so it's Fan Mail Friday, and we answer the correspondence that listeners send in. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And let's just jump right in, okay. Right? Let's open it up. It's right here on the pool table.
Yeah, there it is.
All right, so the first thing I'm going to pull out here is... this is a tweet.
A tweet.
Let's start with a tweet.
Okay,
let's
cool.
pull a tweet out of the bag. Yeah. The tweet is from someone named Darkroom.
Mm-hmm.
Darkroom says, "Here's my backyard oasis for rockin' in suburban Raleigh.
Nice.
Looking forward to cooler nights and fires on the patio." So what this is in reference to, Patrick,
check that out,
look
man.
At these photos.
Holy Christmas. That's fantastic.
That's where we should be doing a live event.
We need to get there.
Think?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's
so
got
what,
like an oven.
What this is in reference to is that we recently recorded some episodes on your back patio with the fire pit.
Yeah, it was nice.
And then I think at one point we said send us photos of your patios and fire pits and all that stuff.
We got them.
We got a couple of them.
Very cool.
So from Darkroom here. Look at that. Isn't that beautiful?
That is outstanding.
So a nice big patio with a pergola over
fantastic.
The top. Some really nice looking outdoor furniture there. And then in the
look
corner,
that,
here you can see it lighted
wow.
up.
Wow, that's
in
beautiful.
The corner is like, it's like a fireplace. It's
that is
like
fantastic.
A stone fireplace
really
that's
is.
Built in, right?
Beautiful. It looks like they've got some sort of cooking apparatus there to the right, man. That could be great. He's like
so
some brick oven pizza.
If we can make a trip down to North Carolina, we could do some shows from there.
Yeah.
Would that be great?
Yeah, it would be fantastic. I love it.
And then somebody else here on my computer also sent us, Kevin Clement. Oh, yes, from Louisiana, Baton Rouge, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
On Facebook, he posted a photo, says, challenge accepted. It needs to be used, but the temps haven't gotten quite cool enough in South Louisiana, and he's got like a built-in like
stone
little
stone fireplace, fire pit.
Stone
that's
fire
nice.
Pit mm-hmm. built in.
I like that.
Yours is more like a portable thing. Like it sits on the
patio.
Right?
Yeah, you can move mine around a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah. Bring it inside.
It's in his backyard.
No, don't do that.
No.
Does it ever get cool enough in South Louisiana? I guess is the question for Kevin to crank up
so.
A fire. Maybe in the wintertime it does.
It reminds me of remember that terrible movie Elizabethtown.
I think so.
I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah. Cameron Crowe was involved.
It's really terrible, but there is, and it came out when I was living in Kentucky, so we were all very excited about it. But there is one line that I just always thought was really funny, because in the movie, and this does, sort of applies to Louisiana, the South in general is where I'm getting to here. But in the movie, the main character comes from like the Pacific Northwest to Kentucky because of his father's death. And it's like his father grew up in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the family is. That's where the funeral is going to be, all of this stuff.
Yeah.
So he goes back to Kentucky. And at one point he's walking with like a cousin. It's like nighttime and they're walking down the street. And he says something to the effect of like, "Does it ever cool down here?" And the response was no.
Never does.
And anybody who's lived, you know, anywhere in the South and understands that humidity knows that, even when the sun goes down,
always
it's
there.
Still hot.
Yeah. That's right. You're still sweating in bed.
That's right. All right. This is not why you called.
No.
You called to talk about the Talking Heads,
that's
right?
That's what it was.
So Jeff. With that, we're going to get to Jeff from Kansas City.
Hi, it's Jeff from Kansas City. I just listened to the Talking Heads show, and I bought that album back in 1977, or it might have been when I was in high school. So, and I remember listening to it because I had bought it just on reading Rolling Stone and reading Circus magazine back then and just trying to find, just thought, this sounds interesting. I got to see what's going on. And the thing that put me off at first was it's just that really twangy, buzzy sound of it, everything. It's like every other musical album at that time, every band was using that wall of distortion, just trying to fill up all the space, and this was so spare and spread out that the guitars probably didn't use any effects pedals or anything at that point, and it just sounded really, like, spare to me, and I just took, and his lyrics were just strange. I mean, I kept following through all their albums, but that one just, at the time, was just a total surprise to me, because I think I was expecting him to sound like the Ramones or Television, who I'd listened to, who just were basically built around loud guitars. And they didn't sound like they were even loud. They sounded really like they were trying to play to not be, to not wake up the neighbors or something. So anyway, I really enjoyed that show, and thanks.
All right, thanks for the call, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff, from KC.
So he brings up something that we didn't really talk about in all the talk about the Talking Heads albums, which is the kind of sparseness of the sound. I mean, we talked about the beats, the polyrhythmic beats, and you know the African influence and some other aspects of how the sound came together, but we didn't really talk that much about how sparse it is and how different maybe that was for the time, right?
Yeah, and it's an interesting way to approach it, the way Jeff kind of took it, thinking about the guitars being played quietly, which in some cases they really were, really were, and they were kind of chinky and tinny, and I think that was part of the approach. You know, I think by design, the Talking Heads, you know, knew they would stand out if they kind of played that way. And that's a really interesting observation. I hadn't thought about it really until he brought that up. Mark Neese on Facebook, Jim, actually wrote something about the Talking Heads, too. Good friend of ours. He says, what is particularly striking to me about the Talking Heads' body of music is that most of it is timeless. The recordings have aged extremely well, at least maybe until Little Creatures and True Stories. Their production is a bit dated on those records. Remain in Light could be released in 2017, and I think it would fit right in, right? And I think you expressed a similar sentiment at one point.
About
one of the albums. Yeah,
yeah. I don't remember if it was Remain in Light or Fear and Music, but somewhere one around that time period where I basically said, you know, take a band today like LCD Sound System, and it sounds very similar to what the Talking Heads were doing back then. No diss on LCD Sound System. I think they're fantastic bands, absolutely. But you know, if you're going to have an influence, you can't go much better than Talking Heads.
Yeah.
But the point being that I think Mark is exactly right. Like, this music sounds very vital even today. And so, again, another reason why people should really check out these records, because,
absolutely.
You know, I think if you were to go, say, buy some new records at like your Urban Outfitters, right, that, you know, you could put Remain in Light right there
right
next to there,
those
albums,
exactly.
and the kids wouldn't know
it
wasn't released
exactly.
Now.
I definitely think that's a great point by both you guys. Yeah, absolutely.
And then Georgia Macatello, one
nice
of our longtime
her.
Listeners, she tweeted at us about a comment I made. She said, including the photo with Tina that was on More Songs About Buildings and Food, she says, was revolutionary, especially during this disco era with women mostly dancing, not playing.
Yes.
And then she says she saw Talking Heads with Tom Tom Club open at some 82 or 83, I think is what she's saying here.
That's very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. So again, good point. I think I said something in effect of putting the band on the cover for the second album, and that you got to see that, you know, Tina was a part of the band and not the singer.
Yep.
And like she said here, you know, in that time period, you know, women were not only, you know, just primarily singers, but, you know, also kind of had to like put on a show,
extent,
had to be these kind of like performers to be popular. And here was, you know, somebody who was just making great music, right?
Yeah, exactly. Very
part of this unit.
Right. Plainly dressed, just like the rest of the band, kind of dressed down. You know, they really had that sort of matted down, kind of nerdy look, you know, ahead of a lot of people too, the Talking Heads. And yeah, just nobody ever said anything about it. It was just accepted she was an equal. Accepted.
Yeah. And the bass playing is fantastic. Oh, unbelievable. On those records.
The way she grew over that short period of time that we talked about from 77 to 80, you know, 82, 83, it's unbelievable what she was doing.
She really should get a lot more credit for being, I think, a pioneer.
Absolutely. You
know? All right. Okay. Now, old friend of yours, I think.
Doug Mulvihill.
You want to read the email from Doug?
Yeah, I'll definitely read this.
About Husker Du.
Nice email when I'm not sending him emails about Lee Baines III and the Glory Fires. but yeah, Doug shot us a note here right after we had our Rest in Power episode for Grant Hart. He writes, I was a big Husker Du fan, of course, but today I feel sort of guilty about it. Back then, I liked the Replacements more. As a young man, there was something very appealing about the Replacements and the unpredictability of their shows. But today, I think it's clear that Husker Du was a far better band with much better output. I almost want to apologize to Mold for liking the Replacements more back then. I now listen to Husker Du way more. The albums are stronger and more consistent. Do you really need to hear Waitress in the Sky again? I don't. I bought Zen Arcade shortly after it came out, probably based on REM recommending them. Yeah, that was big for me. I wasn't ready. Too much, too soon. But about a year later, I heard Flip Your Wig. I was certainly ready for that. And now I consider Zen Arcade possibly the purest music ever made. I mean, they weren't doing that for money. The album was not going to provide them with riches and fame. It was just the music like they wanted to make it at the time. Perfect. I think we went to the Charlottesville 87 show together, Doug's asking me, and I think that might be right. I don't remember you being there, but I do remember being angry that they played all of Warehouse in order with only Flexible Flyer and hardly getting Over It thrown in. I like hearing the new stuff, but that seemed a bit much. We didn't know it at the time, but it was the first show of the tour and the first show played after the suicide of their manager a few days earlier. We were curious what this two-headed beast would produce after the breakup. And it was interesting that Grant quietly dumped a few songs out on SST while Bob was on MTV. Although Grant always had a better pop sensibility, I think he just didn't have the same driving ambition as Bob. Otherwise, I think they would have still been battling it out for supremacy through this week. I have an idea for a show. You need to have a show about why Jim doesn't like Kiss and why he is so wrong. That's a perfect way to end an email. So thank you very much, Doug. I got to troll my memory banks about 87 in Charlottesville and maybe call Dave McChesney, see if he remembers exactly who was there. But yeah, Jim, Kiss.
Put that aside for a moment. We'll get to that in a second. Just a quick comment on Husker Du versus the Replacements. It's funny because they were sort of a Beatles Stones thing not only, you know, they came out of the same, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul scene, although I think they were from different of those two.
Yeah, right.
The Replacements from Minneapolis and Husker Du was St. Paul.
Yeah,
so across the river there. You can almost see it kind of like a London versus Liverpool kind of thing, maybe in a way. But but I think the comparison is sort of the same, too. If you have like the Replacements as the Rolling Stones being sort of the ragged, you know, party kind of guys, and then Husker Du as sort of the Beatles, the guys who were more professional and, you know, had the more compact produced, to an extent, but, you know, sound, right? The more sort of pop sensibilities in their music. I think it's funny. I go back and forth on those bands. I mean, I've referred to, and I think it's probably true that, you know, I would say the Replacements are probably my favorite band ever. But there are times when I have this kind of same feeling, like, man, but was Husker Du maybe better? Yeah. Like, who would I have liked if I had been part of that scene at that time? I'm not sure, because there's something about that Husker Du power that is just undeniable, you know? And then when you go back, their songs do have a really kind of lasting, you know, impact on you. Like, you can go back and you can listen to them again and sort of find new things.
Totally, totally
in those
agree.
Husker Du songs. And I also think they were ahead of their time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Doug touches on something really important there about being ready for that, because that was, you know, that was kind of a shock, and it was harsh, man, back then to be thrown into Zen Arcade. Really, really abrasive, but also right in your face in a way that the replacement certainly weren't.
Yeah, I think if you look at the 90s alternative explosion that happened, I think to a huge extent, like Husker Du kind of created that sound that came later. And so many of those bands were influenced by them. And, you know, that's why that truly is being ahead of your time, where the rest of the world sort of catches up to you later on.
Yeah.
And I think if you, you know, kind of like we were talking about the Talking Heads albums feel very much, you know, could feel very current today.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you, you know, not only today, but if you went back, say, you know, 20 years ago and somebody gave you Zen Arcade or Flip Your Wig or whatever, that you wouldn't know that it had been, that it had come out 10 years prior, right?
Exactly right. No, it would fit right in there. Yeah. The way they approach things and their sound and the, you know, just the raw power of it. But it's, you know, he makes a really good point. You never got the feeling that Husker Du thought about anything other than just making their art. And, you know, they weren't necessarily worried about it.
As to the other point, are you guys going to, like, do some kind of show where you're going to try to, you know, bring me over to the Kiss Army?
Yeah, we may have to do that. We may have to, like, indoctrinate you into the Kiss Army, draft you into the Kiss Army.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a great idea for a show.
That's going to be tough.
Yeah. We're getting in all kinds of trouble this week. Kiss. Jim, you know,
I don't know how much
close to my heart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that makes one of us.
Yeah. No place for hiding, baby. No place to run. You pull the trigger on me.
One more thing here related to Husker Du.
Yeah.
And we did an episode specifically talking about the Sugar album, Copper Blue, which was, of course, Bob Mould's next band that he put together. We got a Facebook comment from Steve Race, who I believe is new to
fan
mail. So that's awesome. Yeah. He says, thanks for this episode. I'd forgotten how bloody good this album is. Speaking of Copper Blue.
Yeah.
I was jumping around the kitchen like a fool listening to the excerpts you played. Nice. So good. Glad to be of service.
Very cool.
We want that to happen. That's a good reaction.
Enjoyed that episode very much myself. I'd forgotten about how great that record is.
Okay. And then just a couple more things here on the topic of REM. So we did the shows where we talked about the Slicing Up Eyeballs polls, slicingupeyeballs.com.
Those are a lot of fun.
Polls on some different bands. And one that got a couple of comments here was REM. And we got a Facebook comment here from someone named Jacques Motif. And this could be relation.
Is this bread in disguise?
I don't know. It could be that. It could be a relation to one of our friends.
Yep.
The comment says, my current favorite REM tune is Sitting Still.
Love it.
That's a great song.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, I quote unquote discovered them in, I think, 1983 or 84. I don't know what the quote unquote is for,
because
that would have been the time that they arrived. So anyway, since I discovered them in, I think, 1983 or 1984, so I was introduced to Chronic Town, Murmur, and Reckoning at the same time. No albums have changed my life more than those three.
Wow, man, that's a really interesting way to put it too. Yeah, they're certainly right up there for me, those three albums. You know, changed a lot of my outlook and the way I understood, you know, it's almost incalculable.
I think I've said this before myself. I quote unquote discovered REM when they came out with Fables. So that was when I got into them, and then got the other records right around that same time too. But this is not an exaggeration. That was musically a life-changing moment for me. Yeah. REM is that kind of band that when you listen to them, you're sort of like, it not only has an impact you just on how you feel about that particular band, but it almost kind of changes like your outlook on, you know, rock music in general. And then you start discovering all these other bands.
Exactly.
That maybe you wouldn't have listened to before. Mm-hmm. You know, it was totally like that for me. And so
me too.
I agree.
Very much so. We were also at that time in our lives when we were ripe for that kind of band to come along, and they just happened to be the perfect one at the perfect time. I'm the sun and you can breathe. I'm the sun and you're not here. We could bind in the shift. We could gather, throw a fist.
So it's funny because that leads to this last email here.
Uh-huh.
And let me read this because, there's a couple different things here, but let me read the beginning of this part.
Okay.
Where he says, the email here is from Matt Windler. I hope I have that correct. It says, love the REM episode. Every time you guys talk REM, the love and passion you have for them, at least the early stuff, really shines through.
Thank you.
I've already listened to the Friday episode twice since it dropped.
I'd love to hear that.
And then he says, I'm a bit younger, mid-20s. That's more than a bit younger. Mm-hmm. And I got into REM from listening to Supernatural Super Serious on the radio when I was first discovering music. So an aside here, that was off of, I believe, their second to last album. So we're talking, that was only about 10 years ago as we see here today. He says, I jumped from Accelerate, that was the album, to the only REM CDs my dad had, which were Automatic for the People and Monster, so that's the 90s era. I have since collected most of their catalog on CD myself. Okay. In a way, I'm glad I didn't discover them in the 80s because I really enjoy all eras of the band in different ways.
Oh, how interesting.
The downside of being slow to the party, I never got to see them live.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to talk about something else. So I'm just going to pause here for a moment.
Okay.
But I feel kind of in a way we were talking earlier about like the Strokes and the sort of the 2000s New York scene and sort of like, you know, you were talking about the book.
Yeah.
And how you got the book gives you sort of a chance to maybe experience that. Because at that point in time, you know, obviously we didn't live there.
Yeah.
And not only that, we were both older music listeners at that point. So we're, like I said, you almost feel like in some way you're kind of an outsider experiencing this, right? One of the things I feel really lucky was that I did get to live and have this sort of life-changing moment, live REM, the IRS years.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
That was current to my existence, right? And I feel really fortunate about that. I feel like, you know, I'm not sure I would have been affected the same way if I had discovered those records later on.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
Or if I had been maybe older when they broke or whatever. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And I think obviously that shapes, you know, the viewpoint. I feel the same way about some of those SST bands, you know, that we got to see and they were just regularly coming around at that point. I mean, it was just really, really lucky to have been there at that time when indie rock was kind of blowing up. And I feel a lot the same way about Fugazi. I mean, that's one of my all-time favorite bands, but I just happened to be living in the city where they were playing, and I got to see them a lot of times when they were, you know, before they even had a record out and playing in really small places. And, you know, to see a band like that at that time, you do feel really lucky. And also, it's really interesting to see that, you know, somebody under the age of 30 listens to our podcast. I think that's fantastic.
I think that's the best.
I didn't think that was the best part of the email,
right? Yeah. All right, I'm going to save the second part of Matt's email.
Yeah, because it's really good.
for play out. So let's do our little closing business first, and then we'll talk about that.
Sounds good.
So be like Matt and listen to Rock in the Suburbs.
Every day.
Every day.
Twice a day.
You can be of any age, gender, creed.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter.
No, we do not discriminate.
That's right. You can find the show on Apple Podcasts or Audioboom or other podcast platforms.
It's free.
So it's totally free, and it's life-changing.
Yes.
So tell other people about it.
And you're experiencing the renaissance. These are our IRS years.
That's right. That's very good. And you can also find us at suburbspod.com.
Yep.
You can find us on social media at suburbspod. You can be part of the next Fan Mail Friday by emailing us rock@suburbspod.com, or even better, like was it Jeff, I believe?
Yeah.
You can call the Suburban Party line, because we really would rather have this more, you know, in your own voice. So call,
love to hear your voice.
Leave a message, 612-440-1984. Do that. And let's now read the second part of Matt's email, and then we'll play out with his recommendation here. It's really good. Matt goes on to say, a couple of weeks ago, I got a chance to see Peter Buck and his new band, Filthy Friends, play The Independent in San Francisco.
Cool.
It was a great show, and Buck looked like he was having a lot of fun playing, even smiling at times.
That's weird.
I could be dead wrong, but I get the feeling he's the kind of guy that doesn't smile much when he's on stage. He's a pretty serious, you know, performer.
Rock and roller.
Anyway, I love the new music segment you guys did last week, especially Sam Coffey and the Iron Lungs.
Oh, that's cool.
Glad to turn people on to that. He says, so I suggest you check out Filthy Friends' first album, which came out August 25th. Mm-hmm. The album is called Invitation.
Mm-hmm.
He says you can really hear Buck's REM roots on the opening riff of Any Kind of Crowd. And so with that, we'll play out with Filthy Friends.
Love it.
Any Kind of Crowd. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, Matt.
I'm a guy who definitely loves a loud rock band and a band that just fills up all the spaces,
Me too.
You know, Superchunk, bring me more, right?
Yeah.
Of that all the time.